Yes, it's always a pleasure for me to talk about my grandmother. She's still my role model, and she's been a farmer all her life, and she still somehow, she showed me really how to respect materials, if I can say like that, and also how the true sustainability is to have it last for very long.
In this episode, I'm talking with Etienne Geoffroy, ETH alumni, co-founder and CEO of ETH spin-off FenX. I'm Susan Kish, your host at the We Are ETH podcast. Etienne, good morning.
Hi, Susan.
And welcome. Hi, actually, it's your afternoon and my morning. Where are you calling us? Where are
I'm
you joining
calling
us
you
from?
From the middle of Switzerland in the canton of Argovia. Mm-hmm. And in the beautiful city of Turgi.
And is this your production office? Is this where you're calling
Correct.
From? Is this
yes,
your factory?
It's all in one. So you may hear a bit of noise from the production hall, but it's a bit where we are scaling our technology.
Fantastic. So I'm going to guess that you are actually a French citizen.
Correct.
You grew up in France. What part of France did you grow up in? And how did you come to transplant to Switzerland?
So I come from Burgundy, in the middle of France as well, not so far away from Switzerland.
Where in Burgundy?
In Dijon.
Oh, man, one of my favorite towns.
Yes, it's famous for some food, I would say. But it's also perfectly located for me, as I studied in north of France. I then went to Spain, Sweden, and eventually landed in Switzerland. And so it's perfect because it's not so far away from the family, but it's also, I would say, far enough that I can enjoy a new culture.
Fantastic. Now, in all the countries you listed, Spain and Sweden and France, I guess, did you go to those places to study, to start companies, to what caused you to travel so much?
So, yes, it was during my studies. I went to what we call a European engineering school in the north of France. And that kind of also invites you to travel 3 semesters during your studies in different partner universities. And that's how I ended up in the north of Sweden, near the polar circle, and then in the middle of Spain, in Valencia.
Fantastic. Was the ETH the last stop on that? Or how did your undergraduate and your master's in this program you've described? And then what brought you to the ETH in Zurich?
So at the end of my master, I went to do an internship in Winterthur, not so far away from Zurich, at the company Sulzer. And I had the chance to get a position offer at the end. I worked there for a week and I realized that I was very young. I was 23 years old and I felt really not ready to go to the real world. And I must say, I met a very important people that showed me what the ETH was doing. And I had, the privilege to start a PhD at ETH and with the Material Institute of EMBA in Dubendorf.
And is this the lab of Professor André Studart?
Yes. So yes, I would say André Studart plays an important role in my career. He's a mentor. And he also gave me a lot of freedom during my PhD to develop a little bit different types of innovation. So at some point I had 9 projects and it was really the possibility.
At the same time, you had 9 projects?
But it's somewhere a bit in standby sometimes.
You weren't distracted?
Exactly. And I would say it was really easy to connect with different types of innovation and people. Material science has the advantage that you meet with a lot of different disciplinary. So we had the physicist in the same corridor, biologist, food scientist. And so I could develop many types of different ideas.
So out of these 9 projects, what were your most interesting projects and how did you pick the one you actually ended up writing your dissertation on?
It was very different projects. The first one was, and actually the initial one was related to asphalt concrete materials and to make it self-healing. And it was fascinating on the way we could use relatively simple ways to extend the lifetime of asphalt concrete pieces. And that was the origin.
And just to make sure I get it, asphalt is the stuff they use on
the black
roads,
stuff.
Right? So when you're talking holes, you're talking about the very beginning of what I have outside, which are the potholes
Correct.
That come up in winter. Okay, that sounds like a major problem. Good.
And yes, okay. We developed a way to close these micro cracks before they become visible. And that could eventually extend the lifetime of a pavement. And this technology, we brought it, I would say, to first innovation. Definitely, there is a potential to bring it to the market, but it didn't feel like the right moment. And it's also a material that faces a lot of political regulation, and sometimes it's very difficult to bring that easily to the world.
Good. So that was your first, and that sounds like a fascinating project, but you're right. There were a few barriers to getting that guy to
scale. And so here I was really having the right level of expertise next to me. And I would say along my young career so far, I was very lucky to be with the right people. And so I had the civil engineers at the EMBA that was bringing the, I would say, the problems of the real world. And then the approach more from the fundamentals coming from the laboratory at ETH, where here there was a perfect match of skill set. And for me, it was like gathering the information together and try to bring it to the real world.
Let's move to Fenix. How did that one come together? Because it sounds like you started that with your professors and a bunch of people from your labs. And so that sounds like another one of maybe not that nine projects, but
so yes, it was one of those projects. And I would say it comes from a historical technology from the lab that was where you could make ceramic foams. So foams with some specific, and eventually you would put that in an oven at high temperature, and then you could get a ceramic very, very light. And that was very interesting for some specific applications. And during my studies, we were thinking, how could we make that as an insulation material using local materials? And in that particular case, we started to work with ashes from the coal industry. And actually, it started with our professor, André Studart, who comes from Brazil, and show us a picture on Google Map of a big coal plant with a mountain of ashes that were eventually contaminating the ambient air. And so we started with that material and make a foam out of it with a lot of air inside without using high energy processes. And that's how we make a mineral foam that is very light and that would insulate very well. And so that was the start of this technology behind Fenix.
And what gave you the conviction that this was more than a lab project and a bench exercise?
So here I would say it was again luck. And also I was able to talk with a couple of customers, possible customers. And at that scale, I was the only one believing they could be my customers one day. But I was asking them what they need without telling them what we are making. Mm-hmm. And that was very interesting to see that they all say the same. They need materials that are sustainable, non-flammable, and cheap. And that was exactly the matching points that we wanted to bring with this product. We are the techie guys, I would say, my co-founders and myself. And we want to bring something that can have impact on the large scale. So that means we need to understand how this construction world works. And so here, through our partners, through our investors, we had the opportunity to really understand how it works and also why it may be difficult to bring an innovation in the construction market.
So what the challenges are to giving it to scale.
So I think that's an industry that has a lot of responsibilities and also a footprint.
A huge footprint.
I think it's a third of the carbon footprint come from buildings. And so here it's a very difficult approach because you need to build something for many years with materials that usually you need a lot of scale to produce. And so we talk about big investments. So it's very difficult to change the status quo when suddenly a lot of regulations come and ask you, can you stop using this historical material you've been using for so many years? So it's a very difficult approach to change because you deal with a very complex value chain between the producers until the installers, the architects, and eventually the users of the buildings. And so you need to have everyone involved in the process of innovation. And that is difficult and that takes a lot of time.
So let's just talk about the potential impact of this. If a third of the world's carbon footprint comes from buildings, how much of that can you actually change by changing the insulation materials?
I think, first of all, it's important to say that within this one third, a lot of it is used for heating and cooling the buildings. And then another important part comes from the materials themselves. And here, usually, the use of cement, the use of aluminium have a strong footprint on the construction. But then within the world of insulation, you have a very strong responsibility to renovate a lot of the buildings today that are consuming too much energy. And so here we need a lot more insulation to match with all this new constraints that the countries have. And so here, insulation play a major role in reducing the energy consumption of buildings during their lifetime. Then I would say for us, the whole philosophy was really to make materials that have during their whole lifetime a philosophy of having a very low footprint, meaning using local materials, have them in service for a very long time, and eventually to have them very easy to recycle. And I insist on the easy part because recycling materials today in the construction industry is very difficult because you have a lot of materials from different families that can be glued together or put together, and they are very difficult to disassemble and eventually to valorize. And so our approach is to think same family of materials together. So we work with minerals, so with stone-like products, and we want to think of building elements that are made from minerals as well, and that can be all recycled together. And so the idea is really that with an easy process to recycle, we could increase this number that shocked us at the beginning when we heard that 1.5% of insulation are actually recycled in Switzerland.
Wow. That is a low number. Now, that's just Switzerland. Is that exceptionally low, or is that sort of globally about right?
It's exceptionally high, if I may, actually.
Oh, come on. Really?
Today, we start having processes to recycle the major materials we know with the concrete and so on. But a lot of building elements are a mix of different materials. And here, this is very tedious to separate them.
Wow. Okay. So it sounds like you found a market, a problem that needs to be solved, a market that's large and growing, and a solution that ticks the boxes they articulated and some additional ones. How do you get this to scale?
Very easy. No. So it's very difficult because we talk about a product that is a commodity product, and that needs a massive amount of scale to be meaningful from the economics. And so the point is, we started the company now 4 years and a half ago, and we started with a foam that was half size of that. And we started then making the first panel. And now we set up for the last 2 years a small prototype line to fabricate insulation panels that we test, that we certify, and that we put in some buildings. And so that's what we did for the last years. And that was necessary to show that it simply works, and that basically what we were dreaming of as performance, we could reach that. Now, the point is, for the last year, you show the performance, but you also need to show the economics. And that's what we've been doing. And so now we're in the process of scaling up with a first full-size factory together with our partners.
Let's go back to the very beginning. One of the stories that you talked about on your path was the influence of your grandmother on this choice around material science. And I don't know if that was also in terms of your choice about being an engineer, but can you tell us that story?
Yes, it's always a pleasure for me to talk about my grandmother. She's still my role model, and she's been a farmer all her life. And she showed me also a video when she was 16 years old of a documentary regarding the risk and the danger of living in a farm. And you could see that fire was actually a very important issue in the farm. And so they were showing how children should behave in presence of a fire or in presence of risk. And everything was related to the materials at the end of the day. And what she was always telling me is all the tricks that she used to basically manage the whole thing. She was the oldest of the 12 children, so she had a lot of work and ideas to use.
So that got you on the path of looking at the impact of your choice of materials can have in terms of things like flammability and danger, and not just how, and as well as aesthetics and cost and sustainability and all those other things.
Yes, she showed me really how to respect materials, if I can say like that, and also how the true sustainability is to have it last for very long.
Let's talk about the ETH. It sounds like your years at ETH were incredibly fertile in terms of ideas and connections and seeing where things are going. How did ETH influence your path?
I think that was, for me, the first time where I had full freedom to be, crazy or to think far away. and that is not only thanks to my professor Anders Studart, but also to the people in the lab, because there was a very strong drive towards innovation, and it was very healthy. And that was very interesting, because it was easy to collaborate with other people. And again, the mix of skills that you can find in material science is very interesting to get different horizons in your thinking path.
There was a story about you doing this where you took a solution in cancer treatment and applied it to another area. Is that the kind of thing you were talking about, where you take something in X and you apply it to Y?
Yeah, it looks cool said like that, yes. And
it does look cool. Yeah,
And that was actually the idea of using magnetic particles for the asphalt. And so the whole point is that we use today for a technology that is called magnetic hyperthermia, nanoparticles that would be at this very selected region of your body, and where you could apply a magnetic field to slightly increase the temperature and eventually kill cancerous cells. And so that was a similar principle.
Do they actually do that?
Yes.
Is that applied? Okay.
I don't know today, but at my time, there were at least tests on human bodies.
So Etienne, what is your affiliation with ETH now? How do you work with the university?
So I would say we have a couple of ETH kids in the company. So that's, I would say we are deeply rooted from ETH, and we kept a very strong relationship with them. So first of all, the company exists strongly thanks to the contribution of ETH and with the possible programs that we had the opportunity to be part of. And then today we also have a very strong link with the laboratory where we're from, where we have the opportunities to discuss how we could develop the material. And what I like is that the laboratory also develop itself in thinking till the end on how such an innovation could be used on the real world. So it's synergy that we saw for each other, and we are very happy to have this contact very nearby from us.
Very cool. Etienne, thank you. That's a fascinating journey, and I look forward to seeing and tracking the history of the future, I should say, the future of FENEX and where it goes to.
Thank you.
I'm going to close with asking some of the standard questions that we ask our guests. And the first one is really, when you were a little boy, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be a vet in the farms.
Ah.
I think I did a very short internship with a vet who told me that if I want to enjoy family time and friend time, I should not be a vet. That is the alternative.
Got it. Because if a cow's giving birth, they really don't care that you're in the middle of a Sunday dinner.
Exactly.
You mentioned the word innovation many times. What are you curious about these days? What are you learning about? What's keeping you interested?
So I think the step of being in a startup brings you a lot of different facets of, I call, the real world life. And so here you are confronted with completely different topics every day. And that never finish to satisfy the curiosity. So on one day you discuss about the product development, the day after finance, and the day after human resources. And it calls for very different type of skill sets. And to be able to learn that with those who know better, that is extremely and interesting for me to evolve.
So it sounds like you're getting a real life mini MBA in terms of running your company.
Exactly.
What books are you reading, or podcasts are you listening to?
Thank you. Because books, I'm not a very good reader. But I must say, I like a lot biographies, and a lot biographies of athletes. And so that's very inspiring for me. And it's very interesting that everyone can relate to some steps that an athlete can go through. And so I read a lot of biographies of basketball players. And the last one was the one of Kobe Bryant.
Fantastic. And how about podcasts? Any that you listen to?
So here, I must say, it's a lot of French podcasts and it's very different topics. One is called Nota Bene, and it's a different way to see history. And that's what I listen to fall asleep.
And then a final question. When you're in Zurich, which sounds like you go to Zurich from time to time, what is your favorite place to go at ETH or in the town?
So it's very much basketball related. So it's all the spots where you can play basketball in Zurich. And one is at ETH. It's the Politerrasse. And others are called the Beckeranlage or Rösli. And these are the nice spots. But otherwise, near the lake is always a nice spot. And I like the Mittenke because it has a very nice view on the whole lake and the city of Zurich.
You're setting me up to ask this question. Do you play basketball?
Yes. A lot.
A lot. Do you have a basketball court outside in your building?
I had, and I must say, I look when I look for new apartments where the next basketball court is.
And do you have a ring, or whatever you call it, at your offices, at your production plant, so you can play in the loading
dock?
There
is, yes.
I figured as much. Anyway, Etienne, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
I'm Susan Kish, host of the We Are ETH series, telling the stories of the alumni and friends of the ETH Zurich, the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology. ETH regularly ranks amongst the top universities in the world with cutting-edge research, science, and people. Both the people who were there and the people who are there and the people who will be there. Please subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you listen. Give us a good rating on Spotify or Apple or YouTube if you enjoyed today's conversation. I'd like to close by thanking our producers at ETH Alumni and LA Media, and to thank you, our listeners, for joining us today.